CliffCentral.com.
Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I've got a song in my head. And for some reason this morning it was this. You approve?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, then we're Stevie, man. The man wrote songs in the key of life.
I know. I love this dude. Ooh. Love him.
Very profound.
That's the name of the album.
Oh, very nice.
Are there heathens who don't like Stevie Wonder's music?
I think there must be.
They are sick in the head.
Let's ask you, king of hating.
Oh, they are sick in the head. Anybody who doesn't really recognize his genius.
Put that on the hate list. People who don't appreciate
Stevie. Yeah.
All right. Let's just get to one or two quick messages before we move on. Riet says, I told my first year Stellenbosch daughter, so help me, I will discommunicate your ass and leave you to the wolves if you as so much as make a peep to join an activist movement or burn down anything. You put your head down and study. You work on weekends in that restaurant to help me. You be among the 20% who finish studies and excel. Yes, I'm putting pressure on you. Welcome to my world.
Jeez.
Good for you.
Whoop, whoop.
I wonder what the pressures are like for parents when it
like
focuses
that.
On education. The other day I found myself learning about, and they exist in the States, but specifically in New York, learning about private school consultants.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who will advise parents on how to ensure your child gets into the right school. Like, they are paid, the average was like upwards from $30,000. Like,
and these are people who like tell you who to give the brown envelope
to be able to
get into the.
Yeah.
And is that what we're talking about or not?
The way they've made it sound very legitimate, but it's like, okay, your child already at 2 years old should be at this sort of preschool. They should be learning this now. They should be, you know, knowing a new language. At the interview, you should do this. You should say this because the pressures are there to ensure that your child is educated properly. So.
You know what? Yeah.
I don't know who would pay that in South Africa. I don't think we...
So they don't necessarily pay for consultants like that. But a lot of these top schools that have, like, the kids with the 8, 9, 10 distinctions have all sorts of scaffolding for those kids. So over and above the day, which is like crazy and hectic on its own, and the sports and all of that included. Mm-hmm. They then also engage with educational psychologists who give extra whatever.
Oh,
extra.
Wow.
There's that is a big business in this country. I know, I've seen it. I've seen the quotes.
So this is pressure to do extra murals and things?
Not extra murals. So like extra help with maths, English, the, you know, kind of
like tutors,
study techniques and additional tutors. And why do you think things like Kumon have such huge like returns? There's like Master Maths, Kumon, all of that shit. That's what that's so over and above the fact that your teacher is there in the class every day. Like, there's huge pressure.
And then your kid ends up being stupid anyway.
Or then ends up after, you know.
Imagine being a parent and you've gone to all this trouble and you've paid for all these extra lessons, your kid's still a dumbass.
And then bucket loads of education.
It's not the kid's fault, it's you.
Bucket loads of money. Then your kid says, actually, I want to become like, you know.
See ya.
An actor.
Like Olivia, what's his name? With the mom with the college admission scandal.
A YouTuber.
Olivia,
yeah.
Whatever her name is.
Lori Loughlin's daughter. Yeah.
She's just a social media personality.
Yeah. I would love
Instagram and all of these social media platforms to just, for 3 weeks, just deactivate everybody. Shut down. Wouldn't it be funny to watch how people would suddenly scramble, but not just for 3 weeks, actually. Let's make it for a year so that they actually have to find meaningful occupations.
There's a Black Mirror episode in that.
Oh, I'd love to see what had happened to those people then. All right, anyway, let's move on. We've got other things to do. Sia, will you be traumatized by going back to Hyde Park for the premiere tomorrow? Don't laugh, Mbulelo, you bastard.
Sorry, that caught me off guard.
Mbulelo.
It's very triggering.
Sia is going to be keeping a logbook Not only of all the things Mbulelo hates, but of the things he hates about Mbulelo. All right. There are some things going on in the world. Let's start with Pamela Anderson. Very important.
How bizarre is this story? So we didn't even get to discussing it literally like 12 days ago when Pamela Anderson got married to a man who has been in her life for over the past 20 years. He's a movie producer in Hollywood by the name of John Peters. But the reason why it's relevant today is 12 days later, after their wedding ceremony, they are now getting separated.
Pam, please listen to me, honey. sit down. Just sit down and listen to me. You are a sweetheart. You've done a lot for animal rights. You've done an enormous amount for young men when you were in Baywatch all those years ago, bouncing around on the beach.
Yeah, yeah.
You've done a lot for amateur porn because you were there before Paris Hilton, before Kim Kardashian. You were the original amateur porn star when you made that brilliant short clip on the boat with Rick Salomon. Who will ever forget that?
Tommy Lee.
Tommy Lee.
Sorry.
Oh, she has two sex tapes. Yeah. Oh, I forgot. She's
the queen of the original set. You are a pioneer.
She wrote the playbook.
She's what you might call a tastemaker.
Baby, Pam, please, listen to me. You've done enough. Your life is full. You don't need a man. You have achieved everything that most of us could ever hope to achieve in 10 lifetimes.
Including hepatitis C.
You even have the hep.
Yes, she did.
That's right. No, she's still got it because that does not go away.
Ooh.
It's there forever.
She's done it all.
Like that, I can never remember, is it the type 1 or the type 2 diabetes?
The herb.
Diabetes. Oh. You also don't get rid of that one.
High blood.
So, Pam, just take it easy. You don't need to be marrying some dude. I'm sure you've got some money put away. I'm sure that your kids are all grown up now. And really, it's time for you to just have a quiet retirement and go gracefully into that green pasture that they put old Hollywood actors and actresses into. Just relax. There's no more pressure, Pam. You've done enough.
Do you know, it is such a short span of time that they were together for. They haven't even received their marriage certificate.
Right.
So they can't even file legal paperwork for their separation because they don't even have their marriage certificate. Now, don't get Mbulelo riled up because already he hates attending weddings. Mm. Now, imagine attending a wedding then 12 days later.
It's over.
You hear the couple is over. Yeah. So, yeah.
I would ask for the present back. Okay, so let's just look at this. Pamela Anderson's been married 5 times.
Mm-hmm. So with this particular marriage, they got married on the 20th of Jan, and this is the statement that they released. She says that I have been moved by the warm reception to John and my union. We would be very grateful for your support as we take some time apart to reevaluate what we want from life and from one another.
Maybe you should have taken that time before you married each other. What's the hurry?
Exactly. So this John and Pam met in the 80s at the Playboy Mansion.
Oh, and what they a great say place romance to meet the dead. Man of your life. Yeah, yes. Good.
They both were in relationships at their time. They briefly dated, and even though they both separated and they moved on with other people, John said just before they got married now that he had always had his eye on Pamela Anderson. He, in his own right, is very successful.
Oh, well, join the queue, dude. I mean, if you guys were, like, met in the 80s and you're a dude, how old is he?
He's in his, like, they have a 20-year, 25-year age gap. He's in his 70s.
She's 52. I can't believe Pam Anderson's only 52.
She'll always forever
be. That's why I'm really impressed with J-Lo. And I know we said yesterday that her Super Bowl performance was probably not family-friendly, and the Super Bowl's a family-friendly event, but I'm not complaining. So Shakira and J-Lo, I would like to extend a warm round of congratulations
yes.
to both of you. And listen, J-Lo is no spring chicken anymore.
She's 50 on the dot.
Right. Looking fantastic. I know 20-year-old girls who don't look as good as J-Lo.
My knees were sore just looking at their performance.
But I'll tell you what, Pamela in her prime was a fantastic example of the absolute magnificence.
When was her prime? Baywatch.
Yes.
She was the apex.
She was terrific. They could do that title sequence of just her running on that beach in that red costume.
This is a terrible conversation. I will not participate in it.
Why?
Hold on, give me a minute. I'm having a happy flashback to my...
Gareth needs a moment.
What was it, my teen... I was probably, yeah, I was late teens, early 20s.
Late 90s.
Sweet Jesus, Pamela Anderson. You were an icon. Look at you now.
Young Jason Momoa. Young Jason Momoa and Baywatch. Now that's what I'm talking about.
Do you remember who else was...
Stop it, guys.
Who else was launched by Baywatch? There were a couple of those people.
The Hoff?
The Hoff, well...
Wasn't launched by Baywatch.
No. Oh, he was already Knight Ridering. Yes, okay, sorry.
Heaven.
How dare I?
How dare you?
Hoff was... Please, he was one of the geniuses behind Baywatch. You know, Baywatch still has record ratings in television history. There was never a plot, really... It was just stuff that happened on the beach.
Mm.
There was never really any meaningful relationship. Even between the Hoff and his son, it was kind of tangential because it was an excuse to be on the beach and have these semi-naked people running around. It was just a ratings bonanza. TV is not complicated. Put good-looking people in as little clothing as possible on TV.
Mm.
Ratings.
Okay, let's see. Let's see if that formula applies with other things.
Mm. No, women might have cared about the melodrama.
Melodrama.
None of the women were watching Baywatch.
Gareth.
We still watch a lot of wrestling and sport. Good-looking people, sometimes half-naked. Carmen Electra was in Baywatch.
That was Carmen Electra. You remember her?
Mm-hmm.
Right, who else?
Remember Jason Momoa, who's now like Aquaman and whatnot.
No, but that's new, isn't it? He wasn't in the original.
No, he was in the original.
Wow, okay.
A young Jason Momoa.
I didn't realize that, all right. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, some of these people...
She is obviously a fan.
Mila Kunis was once in Baywatch in her earliest, but she was also in that 80s show.
Thank God for Baywatch, is what I'm saying.
No, that 70s show.
That one.
Yeah, a great show.
That was a good show. All right, Yasmin Bleeth is another one.
Oh, my
she was fantastic, so thank you for that one. That's an excellent suggestion there from Hermin coming in. Mm. Pumi is spot on. Educational psychologists have sessions with kids to see where they are battling, which then gets sent to therapists to work on. Then you pay the therapists who are sent to help deal with their anxieties. This all adds up to dollars. So this is Pumi talking about what kids have to do now to get through school from Taryn. Sure.
Yeah, big business.
Educational psychologists, then therapists, then... are you kidding? I didn't have any of this. I just got a clap on the back of the head if I wasn't at work. I mean, I wasn't at school.
And look how well you turned out.
I turned out fine. I'm okay. I'm happy with this. I'm still fixated on Baywatch, but otherwise
but
I'm okay.
I'm telling you, there is money to be made out of parents.
Sure.
Parents, they'll pay anything for their bundles of joy.
You will be called all kinds of things by the rest of parents' society if you don't do the absolute maximum for your kid.
Mm.
That's the scary thing.
Well, on the note of education and the cost of education here, we know that around this time of the year, there are a lot of demands for parents, and some parents just generally can't afford to sum up some money for like stationery and uniform and whatnot. There's this awesome person who's still anonymous in the Western Cape who's been going around settling some lay-by accounts at stores, but only for stationery and school uniforms. And I think this is so awesome. This anonymous spender has spent more than 337,000 rands settling these different accounts off. So lay-by people going in as piecing together some money to
And this person doesn't want any credit. They're not obviously they don't like credit. That's why they're paying off other people's accounts.
They
don't want any credit for doing this.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, and people say that rich people are shit. Like, honestly.
Yeah, it all actually came to light from the Facebook group I'm staying, which is still around. Some people who work at this particular PEP store, where they noted that some of the accounts have been written off. So he's paid off more than like 300 odd people's accounts. So you think about it, 300 odd accounts that have been created because people can't afford to pay for their kids. Those are like lives changed, and I think that's awesome.
I want to talk about the bunch of winners. We're looking at South Africans who've done amazing things as opposed to Fikile Mbalula's bunch of losers. We're looking at a bunch of winners, and we've met some of these people. And last week, Bulela was telling us about another one. So this week, we've got another winner that we need to focus on. Who is this person?
We do. This week, we got a guy called... Well, I'll tell you at the end. Let me tell you here, this guy is absolutely incredible.
Oh, you're going to drum it up.
And we've gone back to the adventure space, because I absolutely love people that can endure adversity and I admire those types of people. Next week we'll have a really cool one. I was hoping to get her on this week, but she was unavailable. This week, bunch of winners. As we've said before, we are tired of mediocrity being the bar for South Africans. Eskom, 30% marks, presidents that barely passed high school. We're tired of that. We say no more to mediocrity. South Africans have been great and continue to be world leaders in so many fields.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you about this guy. So he said going to the army shaped absolutely everything he would go on to become. He saw death at the age of 18, and it was the first time that he realized that man would do whatever it took to survive. Could you imagine seeing death at 18? Sometimes we don't think about that.
Yeah, we again, our coddled generations now.
So he was on the front line. He was on the front line at 18, Angolan border. But anyway, his first great feat, a solo traverse of the South American continent in 1997. He climbed right from the foot of the Pacific to the Andes Mountains. From there, he took something called a hydrospeed. Don't know if you know what that is, but it's like a river board, right? So it's something you climb on like in a river in a paddle, but it's like basically a piece of foam or it's unbelievable.
And you paddle this thing?
So, well, you kind of just ride wave or the crest of a wave or a wake, generally.
It's a lot of work.
And he did this for 7,000 kilometers down the Amazon River. 6 months solo, no assistance, and he was done. 6 months. In 1999, he was the first human being to circumnavigate the world around the equator, unaided, with no engine-driven support. It took 18 months. 2006, another world first. A 60-day voyage on skis without dogs or motorized transportation. For 2 months, he pulled what you call a pulka. If you don't know what a pulka is,
What is a pulka? You're teaching me about new forms of transportation.
So you've seen huskies, right? Imagine those things that...
A sled.
It looks like a sled, but it can be pulled by humans as well. So it's not quite a sled, right? It's like...
Has this guy not heard of motorized transport?
You've never seen a pulka?
No.
I guess we'd have to Google.
How do you spell that?
P-U-L-K-A. Pulka. So he pulled this, right?
He pulled the pulka?
He pulled the pulka for 2 months in the total darkness. That's what makes this expedition incredible, right? And being a world first, from Cape Artichevsky in Russia to the North Pole. It's never been attempted again because in places the ice is paper thin. But this was 60 days in the pitch dark. And then his crescendo so far.
It's called a pulk.
A pulk.
P-U-L-K. It's a Nordic short, low-slung, small sled used in sport or for transport, pulled by a dog or a skier, or in Lapland, pulled by reindeer. So in other words, Santa Claus has got a pulk.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit in Christmas carols that much. Doesn't roll off the tongue.
Right, so also, I just want to say, because a pulka is something else that you can eat.
Dashing through the pulk.
It's not dashing through the pulk.
Well, I'm just trying to make it fit.
Open pulk.
Pulk.
That's right. You didn't eat a pulk.
Okay, so just tell me, this guy's obviously done a lot of crazy adventuring. Give me the synopsis. What's so special about him?
Listen, first adventure.
Apart from the fact that he can't locate motorized transport,
and he doesn't want to. Mike Horn, if you haven't seen him.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Yeah, and
Mike Horn.
That's the guy. He is incredible. South African born, now lives in Switzerland, and currently his latest thing was pole to pole, first man to go from north to south pole. He's unbelievable. So, and then just to finish off, just so you know what's special about him, mental. Genuine hard man. He's the first man, 5,100 Ks, using only kite and skis, and he completed the longest ever solo unsupported traverse of the Antarctica. And what makes that special is that on a good day, it's -10 to -60 there. So Mike Horn, Walk first galore.
He's putting himself through hell.
This is just we're trying.
And you think you think traffic in the morning is a problem?
Yeah, we're protesting about education, and here's this guy, right? So for me, the genuine article, since we're South Africans, the real Magoya for this week, our hashtag bunch of winner human, Mike Horn. Go and check him out, MikeHorn.com. We'll try to get him on.
I think I may have interviewed Mike at some point because I know of him. I mean, who doesn't really? He's got a tremendous reputation, but these things that he's done are just insane. So thank you, Mbolelo. There we go. Carmen Electra was way hotter than Pam Anderson. You see, these are the conversations I used to get into when I was at high school and in varsity. Good point, well put. So you're exactly the kind of person I would have spoke to Carl all day, every day. Her in FHM was still in the spank bank, says Carl. Isn't that exciting?
You see, this is exactly... I knew this conversation would go.
Do not Google Yasmin Bleeth today. Okay. Apparently. Well, now everybody's going to.
Who is that?
She was in Baywatch as well. She was quite hot at the time. Tubby So says,
just don't Google her.
Oh, is she not? Okay, yeah, rather not. Yeah.
Tubby So says, good morning, people. Going for an interview. Wish me luck.
Good luck.
It's
good luck.
A solar power company. If I get the job, I'll hook you up, Gareth. If not, then I'll tell you their name, and you don't go with them, because fuck them. And don't tell me about entitlement. It's been a year. Anyway, be easy, y'all. So there we go. There's Tubby. So thank you, Tubby. So
good luck, Tubby.
Tubby, so good luck.
Someone saying you need to get Mike Horn in. This guy is a machine. He's amazing. All right. Good morning, guys. Happy belated birthday, Sia. So sorry to hear what happened to you on Saturday. Peace and love, peace and love.
Thank you. Talking about someone else's birthday, I love corny segues. Anyway, I'm just making it work. Today, the 4th of Feb, I'm just bringing this up because it's brought on so many memories.
Who?
Today's the birthday of Nkosi Johnson.
Oh, wow.
My goodness. To
so
think about how much has
how
changed.
How old would he be now?
So he died in 2001. He was 12 years old. Oof, my maths is bad. Plus 18, he would have been 30.
Yeah, I was at his funeral. Right.
You sang there, right?
Yeah, among other things. Well, it is Valentine's month, and that's just one extra reason to spoil yourself a little at the Skin Sense Day Spa in Rivonia, Johannesburg.
Ooh.
Yes, this month's specials include a package deal, a back, neck, and shoulder massage, a mani or pedi, a cleanse facial, wash and blow, even some bubbly or a dessert. You get a 2-for-1 Swedish massage for the low price of just 655 Rand. Get to cliffcentral.com for more info, plus the terms and conditions, or you can check out skinsense.co.za, where you can also book treatments and shop online. That's skinsense.co.za. They're here in Rivonia. They're beautiful. I went there last week. Just check on things, and they are ready for you. It's looking good. Very, very nice. Everybody there is so friendly. They are so happy to see you. They treat you like gold. I had In Essentia give me a neck massage and a back massage that I was walking on air afterwards. You need to do this. You need to make sure that you are looked after and occasionally pampered, especially if you're the kind of person who otherwise is intolerable to other human beings. Speaking of myself here, obviously.
And they open late on Saturdays. So you can do your Saturday morning stuff. And then go to the spa, and then go home.
There we go.
And
thank
lie
you.
On the couch till Monday.
You speak from experience, right?
Clearly. But it just reminded me that Valentine's Day is around the corner. Oh, no.
You don't have... Listen, even it's a 2-for-1 special. It doesn't mean you have to take a bae. You can take your best friend. You can take your roommate and split the... No, none of these things are helping you.
She'll
here.
Be
I'm
my
sorry.
Valentine's.
Shame. See, if he had a phone, he could call someone.
To send him nudes.
Or what you could do is send the gift to your ex as a 2-for-1 for his new partner, and you get a nude in exchange.
The only gift I'm sending to my ex is the devil.
Oh, right? Wow. Oh, you can't help those that don't want to be... Okay, as long as you're not angry. As long as you've moved on, Sia.
Yes.
As long as you've got a healthy...
Exactly.
You're never getting those nudes back.
Yeah. I'm totally fine. Can't you tell? I've moved on.
All right. Lots of other things to get to this morning. And we've got our guest coming in. We're going to talk a little bit about health and about the Free Market Foundation, their health policy unit. We're going to speak to Michael Setas, who's going to join us. We'll talk a little bit about the Council for Medical Schemes, and particularly what's going on with the Department of Health and what they're going to do with primary health insurance products. Now, I don't understand why government need to be involved in how people do or don't look after themselves, particularly when there's private health care involved. I mean, if I'm paying into a scheme with Mbulelo and Pumi, it has nothing to do with government. Surely that's something that we can manage ourselves. I don't understand how Zweli Mkhize, who as far as I can tell is neither someone who cares about or is particularly interested in my health, and certainly is not, he's not in any way able to make a financial contribution to my health. He doesn't in any way assist ordinary people in getting any kind of basic health care, because the basic health care system in this country, if you go into a state hospital, you will see, is not the kind of place anyone wants to end up in. Having choice is the whole reason that anyone wants to exist, frankly. To not have choice, to have something imposed on you from the top down, sounds like the kind of stuff that the first part of the 20th century was spent fighting. But we'll leave that for a longer philosophical discussion. It is a debacle that is certain to raise eyebrows if it were to emerge from the Council for Medical Schemes. Now, the Free Market Foundation has it on good authority that under instruction from the Department of Health, the CMS, that's the Council for Medical Schemes, intends to ban primary health insurance products and also have decided to scrap the development of a low-cost benefit option. So to talk about this and explain it to us, we need someone who actually knows what they're talking about, and Michael Settis is a member of the Free Market Foundation's Health Policy Unit. Hi, Michael. Nice to see you.
Yes, thanks very much for having me on.
Yeah, listen, this sounds complicated, but it could have a very dramatic effect on the way people provision healthcare for themselves and the way that they look after their families. Can you help us to understand this?
Yeah, it is complicated. So, I mean, you mentioned earlier about being on medical aid. So there are 9 million people on medical aid in South Africa, but as we all know, medical aid is expensive. Yeah. So insurance industry over the past number of years has created alternative products that are cheaper, because we live in a country where not everybody has the ability to afford the expensive cover.
Right.
So it's filled a gap in the market to a degree. And subsequently, there have been efforts to try and regulate it to make it a regulated component of our health framework.
Let me just understand what these products are, because there's medical aid, which covers a certain number of things, and for each medical aid scheme, it's different, right?
Correct.
I mean, usually these are things that involve hospitalization, things that involve chronic medical costs,
100%, yes.
Medicine itself, regular visits to X, Y, and Z, stuff that maintains your health, basically. Then you get things like hospital plans, which I think of one degree down.
Correct.
Those are things that if you incur sudden and quite dramatic expenses, let's say you have to go for cancer treatments or you hurt yourself, there's trauma, those kinds of things are covered by that. Now, what comes under those?
So I think just to clarify on that, so if you're on a medical scheme, there's a statutory minimum level of cover called the prescribed minimum benefit. So it doesn't matter what option you're on, that's the minimum. But that's still quite an expensive package. So below that are these products that are now sitting under what's called a demarcation exemption, which is given by the Council for Medical Schemes to operate, although technically they should be medical schemes, but the council's allowed them to operate for the last 3 years or so under this exemption framework, with a view that we're eventually going to create a framework for them so that we can go and sell products that cost, say, 300-400 rand a month as opposed to, you know, 1,200 rand a month.
Are those good products or are they shitty?
Well, no, that's not. Look, they're not as good as a medical aid because it's, you know, you get what you pay for. But what they do allow is that people who can't afford medical scheme to at least have some access to the private sector. So typically these products would cover things like going to the GP, getting some medicine when you're sick, basic dentistry and optometry. So it's not a medical aid, but it's some access into the private sector. You know, things like for employers, what they prefer about it is that somebody can go and see a doctor and be back at work within an hour rather than spending a whole day at a public sector they've lost productivity for that person. But in a nutshell now, what happened last year was the council put out a circular 80, which basically said they're banning all these products as from March next year.
Now, I smell statism here. I smell this national health insurance, and I smell propaganda on the part of the government. They were busy talking last week about all the fraud and corruption that's going on in private health care. I mean, this is ironic because we have more fraud and corruption within government than at any other level of anything in the whole of South Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
There's rottenness to the core. There's thievery happening at every level. And these guys are now trying to make it look like the private healthcare sector, which is not lily white and clean.
Yes, let's put it absolutely.
These guys have also got some dirt on their hands, but by no means does it have the kind of theft of public money at question that we're talking about in government.
Yeah.
So there's that going on, and now they're saying, oh no, we want to ban these, we want to keep restricting what ordinary South Africans are able to do for themselves.
Correct.
So that we can control it for you.
Correct. Well, it's a straw man argument to go to the fraud issue. Yes, there's fraud in the private sector, we know that. But, I mean, to put that down as a reason why we shouldn't have these products is ludicrous. I mean, we could say there's fraud in many private sector industries. Does that mean we should shut them down? You know, rather regulate them, and that's the issue that we're actually saying. And I think all the players that we've spoken to have said they would welcome the regulation so that everybody's then on the same playing fields. Because at the moment, there's an accusation from the council in the circular which says there's regulatory arbitrage. Okay, so now technical term for meaning that you're taking advantage of the system. But the players are saying, fine, if you're accusing us of that, put us all on the same level playing field, then we'll operate. But we can still then provide healthcare to people who can't afford a medical aid, but they're willing to spend some amount of money on accessing the private sector for when they are sick or need stuff like dentistry. You know, dentistry in the state is under huge pressure. There's simply not enough dentists. I mean, if you've got toothache, can you operate? Can you work? I mean, it's a simple thing.
People still die from their teeth.
You know, it's crazy. So anyway, but the point about it is that I think your nose is working correctly because you smell correctly.
Yeah. this is all part of a plan.
Look, it happened.
And why? Because clearly the states run out of places to steal money, and they now see the private healthcare business as a place that they can potentially pillage. That's all it is.
Well, look, I mean, there is obviously the belief that this is all to line up for the NHI. We don't have that emphatically on evidence. Although I must say the circular does state that the action is to align with national health policy, and loosely it mentions NHI. But we don't have details of NHI. It's still very much in a broad sort of conceptual state. So what it's going to turn out to be, we don't know. And if we look at international experience, it often takes decades to build national health systems, and invariably they never offer full comprehensive care. There's co-payments that members are still have to make. So there's still always a place for the private sector. So our view would be rather to embrace the private sector to see how much it can grow, where people voluntarily make an exchange for a service in return, and then the state can look after the balance. We're not a wealthy country, so we don't have the luxury of saying being like a Sweden or a Switzerland where they can have very comprehensive systems. We just simply don't have the funds for it. So it's counterproductive to try and cancel these products, to diminish the involvement of the private sector in delivering healthcare, because the private sector in South Africa is world class. I mean, we really should embrace embrace that, and they're capable of delivering care to a lot more people. If only the government would create the regulatory framework and certainty, you know. Policy certainty is a major factor because companies don't want to go and invest money into products building if there's no policy certainty, if something like a Circular 80 is going to come out and say, sorry, we're doing away with it. So create the policy certainty, there'll be the investment, and we can expand healthcare to more South Africans.
Michael, I'm going to ask you to just take a step back with me and some of our listeners probably who feel the same way as I do. So who exactly is the council? Who makes up? Because Council of Medical Schemes kind of suggests that there's a group of people who are all, you know, part of the decision making. Some kind of caucus happens.
What is it?
So who exactly is the Council for Medical Schemes?
Okay, so it's a statutory body created under the Department of Health, and their mandate is to oversee the medical schemes industry. Okay, so that is their particular mandate. Because of certain evolution of certain regulations a few years ago, these insurance products that we're providing, these lower cost products, fell then under the ambit of control of the Council for Medical Schemes. But instead of creating a framework for them, they allowed them to operate by exemption. Okay, so they nonetheless still control or regulated, shall I say, by the council. And the view was that And for the past 5 years or so, the process has been that we as an industry council, together with a lot of the private sector players, would create the framework to now put these products under proper regulation under the Council for Medical Schemes. And that's been the intention for the past 5 years. So the industry was totally shocked last December when the circular came out to say, now we're doing away with all these products.
Mm-hmm. But who is the council exactly? Who are the people? Who are the can we name names?
Is it like medical schemes have got individuals that are part of the council? Department of Health has people that are part of the council. Doctors have people that are part of the council.
Are they appointed?
Or the council is just 10 people that Dr. Zweli Mkhize has decided these are the 10 people.
Yeah, so it's a statutory body. So it's not, you don't
politicians choose them.
Correct. Yeah, so it's like you have the Financial Services Board regulates.
Yes.
You have Treasury regulating the banks.
So they're like the energy regulator.
Correct.
Or any of those. They're basically a bunch of politicians.
Correct.
These are people, there's cater deployment going on there too. Right. And they get paid, don't they?
Obviously, they get paid, yeah.
So do we need these people? Do they have any real purpose? I mean, are they genuinely interested in the health of South Africans, or are they just taking up an office?
Well, Circular 80 doesn't seem to indicate so. But no, look, I think, the medical schemes industry does require regulation. It's a massive industry. It's about 180 billion rand a year industry. But what we would argue, and I think the point we're trying to make, is that we could actually expand that cover. Because of the nature of the current regulatory structure of under the Medical Schemes Act, there are only 9 million people in South Africa who can afford, who are on medical aid, and that's mainly by virtue of affordability. There are another 500,000 people who are under these lower cost exempted products, and we would argue that could be many millions if they created a regulatory certainty around it, so that more private sector providers would be willing to invest into it.
What would that certainty look like? I mean, I think for you guys, when you're saying there's a framework that you're requiring, and at some point everybody was involved in kind of setting up this framework, what would that look like?
Well, it would actually then fall under the Act itself and in regulations. So what's been happening now for the last almost 3 years is these insurance companies have been operating under an exemption, which is purely at the behest of the council. So what they did now in Circular 80 last December is pulled it. So it just exemplifies how fragile the existence of it can be. So that if upon a whim that's decided by some sort of policy decision that we're going to take it away, that's the uncertainty that's left for private sector providers. So we would argue that rather work towards creating certainty then actually put it into law. So change the Act, change the regulations that are required to enable it. Then private sector people actually have, providers have certainty, and they'll invest into it. And then we can expand the private sector. The health coverage for people.
And I think for a lot of people who are on some kind of medical aid, the concept even around prescribed minimum benefits and all of the things that go with it, like payment gaps and all sorts of things, is a hard to understand concept.
Absolutely.
And what I'm struggling with, even within this conversation, is the understanding of why, if there are prescribed minimum benefits, why do we need something below that threshold? And why is it that the prescribed minimum benefits then do not become the universal kind of, this is the low-cost product, is just the prescribed minimum benefits, the bare bones of it?
Yeah, the problem for them from a South African context is that prescribed minimum benefit level is still too expensive for the majority of citizens. To put it in perspective, on the last council's report, the cost of delivering the prescribed minimum benefits is about an average of 850 rand per beneficiary per life. So if you're looking at, say, a family of four, you're looking at 3,200. That's just the actual medical cost. Once you had admin costs and all, you're getting close to, say, 4,000 rand a month, which is, you can obviously know for yourself, for most South Africans, they can't afford that. Whereas on these primary care products, typically the range we see is sort of from around 250 to 400 rand a month per life. So it's substantially cheaper, and some families can afford that. So it becomes in a binary choice without them, those products. You have a binary choice of the expensive medical aid or nothing. Whereas we're saying we can have something in the middle.
Yeah. I don't know. Surely the market provides answers to this, because the market's better at this than government and regulation ever will be.
Well, the market has provided it. Yeah. So it has been there in the guise of the insurance.
It's like it's done that for funeral policies. It's correct. Done that for insurance. It's done it for a bunch of things. And you're saying you'd like a little bit of regulation, but mostly let people choose. Now, I don't understand how this is complicated. I don't see how... Look, healthcare is expensive. It's probably going to be, aside from people's homes, if they are in a position to own their own homes, or even pay them off over a period of, 20 years or whatever, and their means of transportation, it's probably the next most expensive thing in people's lives.
It certainly is. I think it probably ranks third or fourth.
And in terms of priority, it's probably right up there in the top three as well.
Well, you know, healthcare is internationally, healthcare costs are rising above inflation all over the world. It's an international problem. Healthcare is also a highly emotive product. You know, it touches at your core. If you're sick, this is the product that you rely on to actually make you better.
How could it ever be a good idea for us to have less choice?
Well, we don't believe so. I mean, certainly not.
There is no good argument for less choice.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it sort of falls back into if you have a patriarchal state who believes that they should be providing all services to you. So, like, should we now ban private schools because everybody should go to a public school? Or should we take away private security because everybody should rely on the police? This is the same type of rationale.
That's all fine if you actually have a capable state, but you don't.
Well, yes.
We do not. These people cannot keep the lights on in government. So we're not dealing with people. If I am in a situation where my health, my life or death is in the hands of people who cannot even keep Kusile and Medupi functioning properly, I am very concerned for my fate.
Correct.
So this is not even a debate that needs to be had. And for this council, as you call them, on medical schemes, you've explained that they're a statutory body, so these are not people who are necessarily the smartest people in the room either. They are probably just appointed by politicians. Therefore, I'm afraid my trust is at an all-time low in these institutions. Is there a way that South Africans can, whether they're rich or poor, insulate or defend themselves from this stupidity? That's the real question.
Yeah, look, I think in terms of this sort of thing, I mean,
the rest is theory.
Yeah, when it comes to healthcare, and as I said earlier, it is a very emotive thing. So, I mean, my sort of stance would be is to lobby against the removal of the rights to access healthcare. I mean, there is already quite a groundswell of reaction to this from the industry, but it's very industry specific. And I mean, I think we'll probably get them to change their minds. There really has been some sort of backpedaling a bit around this thing, because I think they underestimated the reaction that was going to come from the industry on that. For ordinary citizens, you know, I think it's really about making their voices heard, maybe with their local councillors, that type of thing, to say that they want to keep it. I think employers, because a lot of these healthcare products are employers get involved in the provision. So an employer will, I've dealt with many companies over the years. You speak to CEOs and they'll say, you know, they really feel like a social conscience pricking at them when they're running a company of, say, 1,000 employees, and they've got 200 people on medical aid, and the other 800 people are usually generally laborers or lower income people have nothing. And it really pricks at their conscience. They're going, how can we have this binary situation? So these products filled that gap to the point that at least the management can say we're doing something for our staff in terms of providing some healthcare. Although it's not ideal, it's not perfect, but we can give them something that's better than nothing. So the perspective now, government coming along, is they're saying, no, you cannot give those 800 people this care. We want to take that away. And as I say, the circular says quite emphatically is to build in alignment with national health policy and NHR. We have major problems with that sort of thinking. And I think, Gareth, as you said, you know, it's taking away people's rights. It's taking away the freedoms, if you like, in terms of making choice for yourself.
So, Gareth raises the issue of surely the market on the other side is... If there's a market for this and there's a demand for it, the health insurers are willing. What I'm struggling with is some of the numbers, right? So the feasibility of it in the market. If we're saying that at the prescribed minimum, it's at least 3,000 Rand a head, and we know that even with a threshold that says this is the minimum wage, a lot of people earn far below that. But we also live in a country with 16 million unemployed people, right? So in that market space, is it possible that even for the insurers, this is not a very viable place to operate, and hence the kind of saying regulate it to force the companies, because then the companies feel a little bit, okay, so there is this little thing. So is the market viability of it doesn't seem to me like
we've got some
the,
of the
numbers
most,
are adding up.
I mean, you look at companies like Discovery, who've actually exported their IP to other parts of the world. They've been so innovative and so clever about being able to make certain kinds of healthcare available even to people in a market as strained as ours, to the extent that their products are now internationally being procured and bought and traded with in markets like China, for example.
Yeah, 100% correct.
So I don't know that that's an argument even.
Yeah.
These companies are they're forced, because of the nature of South Africa's very strained economy, to come up with interesting and innovative ideas around healthcare, and those are universally successful. The problem is that the much more well-funded, in terms of tax money, public healthcare system is completely collapsed, which doesn't give people even the option of that. I would obviously prefer not to be paying thousands of rands to my medical scheme every month. I don't think there's anyone who wants to. It's a grudge purchase. But it's also about making sure that if you are in deep health trouble one day, you're at least covered. Because what on earth is the alternative? As you said earlier, forget about the productivity of that staff member who has to go and wait in a queue at a public hospital all day, sometimes more than all day. That's the least of the worries. What a deep indignity for this person to have to, in their worst physical state, go and have to put themselves in the hands of a system that just does not care about them.
Yeah, I mean, it exemplifies the point here. You know, even if you look at countries that have capable public health systems, people still aspire to buy private care because they want to. You know, in the South African context, I mean, I look at our public system and it is in a very bad state. It's a disgrace to the country, in my opinion, because people are at their most vulnerable when they're accessing health systems. You know, if we look at the stats in terms of what we have, they really are appalling. I mean, the infant mortality rate in South Africa is 1 in 40 babies born in the state will die within the first year. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible statistic that, you know, like, and then...
And by the way, that goes against all international trends. Yeah. Everywhere in the world, this kind of child mortality rate is dropping.
Yes. Look, to be fair, it has dropped in South Africa, but it's still at unacceptably high levels. It could be much better. And, you know, the thing is, if we look at our public system, it's resourced sufficiently enough to have much better outcomes than what we have. It doesn't have enough to provide, you know, the best healthcare in the world, but we could be doing much, much better with the resources.
With what we've got.
Correct.
In other words, it's a management problem.
It is a management problem, absolutely. What's obviously most distressing about the subject, you know, today at Circular 80 is that we are taking people, 500,000 people who've decided to purchase this care. This is all they can afford, okay, but they want to do this. They want to purchase it. Nobody's forced them or, you know, coerced them into any of these situations. And we're going to say to them, you can't have that private care. You must now go and face this public system that we've just, you know, given some detail on about. To me, that doesn't sit well from an ethical and a moral point of view.
It comes down to this. I would rather be fleeced by a private healthcare scheme, where at least I know I'm going to get that minimum of care, than be fleeced by the government and private healthcare and not really have a choice.
Yeah.
Because either way, you don't have a choice.
Yeah. Look, you know, what you said earlier, healthcare is like, it's like any insurance. Your car insurance is a grudge purchase.
Yeah, nobody wants
nobody
it.
Nobody likes to buy insurance. But,
and if you're healthy, you think, what a waste of money for this year.
Yeah. No. Or if you don't claim, you know, like I believe somebody lost a cell phone this weekend. You know, the thing is, but I mean, I come back to the point that South Africa's private health sector is of world standard, world quality. You know, you mentioned earlier about Discovery exporting their services around the world. I mean, that's something that we should be patting ourselves on the back as a country to say, yes. Right now, the private sector could overnight cover millions of people under these types of lower cost products. There's capacity there. I mean,
but this is a cynical attempt by government to enforce their own ideological.
Yeah.
Wait, allow Michael to finish what his thought process. Calm down.
Was I not going in the right direction?
No. Let him speak for himself.
100%. I think you've just been shouted at, but anyway. we could expand the cover, not we, I mean, like the industry could expand the cover dramatically overnight if it was given that regulatory certainty that, as I mentioned. I mean, if you look at the administrative and management systems that exist within the private health sector, they really are world class. I mean, companies like, say, Discovery, you've got companies like Momentum, you've got companies like Medscheme, these are all major administrative. If you look at the operations these people have got, they're capable of tomorrow putting these things together and getting them out there. But there's a reluctance to really throw any major money at investing in it until there's this regulatory certainty. Now, the Circular 80 has done diametrically the opposite of what the industry has been lobbying for. Not even lobbying. I mean, I actually don't even want to use that. We've actually been working as an industry actively with council. Council have been going along saying, yes, we want to build this, we're doing this, and then all of a sudden, last December just gets turned upside down, and we're going, everyone's going, what happened? You know, like we all thought we were walking down the aisle together, and we.
What do you think happened?
Look, what I will say is I know that this happened in 2015, and we discovered at that stage it was under direct instruction from Minister of Health at the time, Dr. Motsoaledi, to cancel these products because whatever spurious reason they came.
He's also the guy that's responsible for less sugar in your Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know what the reason is. It's what I was saying just a moment ago.
So, I mean, but the thing is, the circular itself says it's in alignment with national health policy and NHI. So what that means is it's come down. It's certainly not a council decision. It's come from somewhere in the department, probably most likely the Minister of Health.
They are closing doors so that there's only one door left for you to go through.
So
am I wrong?
No, 100% correct.
So in the different industry, maybe almost 15 years ago, there was lots of talk, which for us, with digital desktops, right, with Signal moving away from analog, so radio, TV, all of that stuff. And there was lots of hype around it, and it's going to happen whether you like it or not. And and nothing, the deadline came and went. And very similar what we're looking at with all the conversations around NHI is the deadline will come and go. And there's a deadline here. And I'm just asking myself that in the meantime, while this deadline hasn't arrived and nothing has changed, why is it that the medical schemes providers are so skittish and jittery that they're willing to scrap at least 500 people off their books if it's not to hold a gun to the head of...
No, I don't think the industry is going to take this lying down. I think they certainly have voiced their apprehension. And I think a lot of appeals have been made against the council's decision. And I think failing that, I'm fairly certain that the industry will approach the courts if it's not overturned.
All right, just explain this to me like I'm an idiot. I have a laptop, and Pumi has a laptop, and Sia has a laptop, and we've all bought our own laptops, right? And government comes along with a much more crap piece of technology, and they say to you, no. We're going to take your laptops, which are worth 10 times what our crap laptop is, and we're going to just seize them from your own expenditures and savings and the fact that this is your property, and we're going to take that money to make more laptops of our kind, our crap kind, available to more people. That's essentially what's going on here.
In a nutshell, yes.
Yeah.
Good analogy.
I mean, there's no simpler way to put it, and that's just a road to disaster.
It is.
No thinking person would co-opt themselves into that system.
It's even taken further, because if you read what's in the NHI bill, I know we're not here to talk about NHI, but I think it's all related. Mm. If we look at the NHI bill and what it's written there, what it's stating is that once NHI is in place, that medical schemes then will not be allowed to insure you for the services that the NHI delivers. It's what's known as a complementary system. So in other words, if, say, orthopedic surgeries, like having a knee replacement or something, is covered by the NHR, your medical scheme is not going to be allowed to insure that. So you have to go through the NHR for those services. So it's exactly what you're saying, is just trying to force everything into the singular state-run health system.
Are there, and I've heard rumors of medical schemes which South Africans who can afford alternatives are able to access internationally? In other words, that you could essentially, even if it's outside of the rules of this state, buy yourself medical care in another state and fly there and have yourself treated there.
Not if Donald Trump has anything to do with it.
Look, I imagine that, yeah, you probably could. But that would really be the demand for medical tourism, is that what we're talking about?
Malaysia or places like that where you could probably buy yourself, instead of having to buy a health product here, you buy it somewhere else and then you just fly there when you're sick.
Mm. Why do you think Mugabe was...
Exactly. No, but this is what I'm talking about. So it's two different kinds of system. It's going to be shame. All you poor South Africans, you're going to have to suffer with this. But the people who can afford that, and the people who are probably paying into medical schemes now, will find other ways of finding a home for their money and a place where they can seek some kind of health care outside South Africa. Yeah. Might be in Swaziland, for all we know. That might be a place where these would spring up. Suddenly we have private hospitals all over Lesotho, for example, where people would suddenly just cross the border, go there for treatment and come back. In other words, William Kize still won't get the money. He'll still be delivering a shit product. And people who can't afford the alternative will just take their money elsewhere.
Gareth, that's a great idea.
The only problem is, sorry to interrupt, is that it's only the very wealthy who are going to be able to afford it. Not of the, say, the medical scheme members that do exist now, I would say 95%+ are not going to be able to afford to do that as an option. So it's really...
Well, then get ready for superbugs and all kinds of other things.
I think the point is we need to fight...
Coronavirus.
We need to fight this action in terms of trying to, what we say is, nationalize the private health system and put it under state control. It's
But Michael, what does that look like for a person... like us in this room, when you say we need to fight, what does that look like? How do we do something about all of this?
Well, I think, you know, using it, you're part of technically the press, I would imagine. So you're getting people out. I would say have people on who are like myself, able to talk about these things so we can create greater awareness. I certainly think, going through civil society associations that, you know, can also expand the knowledge so that more South Africans are aware of exactly what's happening.
Is there anything that I can do as a member of a medical aid system? Can I do anything? Just sitting at home listening to this, now that I am aware, what can I do?
Yeah, there's all the public hearings that are going around the country now on NHR. I don't know if you've read about any of them. I mean, it's interesting to read some of those because, I mean, even for people who are on accessing the public system, you know, they're voicing their dissatisfaction. I mean, I heard in the, I think it was the Bloemfontein one recently, in which they said they don't want NHR. Fix the public health system. Well, that's the kind of message that I think people really should be giving to government, is don't promise us Rolls Royce when your Toyota Corolla is falling apart because you haven't been able to maintain it properly, because you're not going to be able to build a Rolls Royce if you can't even maintain a Toyota Corolla. You know, that's the type of an, and that's what we are being sold. So I think in terms of the what exactly to do, I think there's, you know, various channels that you can go through.
Well, I'd like to suggest that people also find out more about the Free Market Foundation.
Yeah. Look, our health policy unit, we do, the work we try and do is to sort of assess and evaluate these types of legislation that comes through or policy decisions, and then try and look at what we believe, is it viable, is it not? Unfortunately, there's been a lot of material for us to work with over the last few years, because when we read these things, we go, they're not viable, they're not going to work. NHR and specifically is so lacking in technical and policy analysis over the last 10 years. It is purely ideology that's driven that document. There's so many unanswered questions. I mean, just as a simple thing, it hasn't yet been costed. We don't know what it's going to cost. Now, I'm going, this is the biggest health policy this country's ever been through, and we haven't costed it. And the ministers, current and previous, have said, well, it's not really that important. And we're going, wow, we think it's very important that we should know how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, give fiscal responsibility. Give even more fiscal responsibility to those who clearly have no idea of how to be fiscally responsible. All right, well, thank you very much, Michael. It's a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you for joining us this morning. And if you want to find out more, then I would suggest you seriously pay attention to what the Free Market Foundation is doing. In particular, their health policy unit, and you can find out more by accessing all of their very good reports and their thought pieces that they're putting out regularly on matters such as medical schemes and so on. And don't let this idiot health department pull the wool over your eyes.
I think the biggest thing I take out from the conversation with Michael is find out what's going on. Don't just sit there and like watch things happen. Participate.
Right.
Be there. Read.
Right.
Show up. Mm. Make your voice heard, because there's options, then opportunities to make your voice heard. Thank you, Michael.
Actually,
for
that. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Thank you very much. That's Michael Settis, and that is our show for this morning. We will see you tomorrow, 6 o'clock, bright and early. Thank you, Pumelele, and we will see you in the morning tomorrow.
Happy Tuesday.
Hey, brother. CliffCentral.com.